There are more than 96,000 women in the Australian public service, but only four head up government departments. We have a female Governor General and a female Prime Minister. So why so few women in senior positions in the public service? Is it lack of ability? Is it lack of confidence? Or is there still an unconscious, if not deliberate, bias against female applicants? Meredith Edwards is Emeritus Professor at the ANZOG Institute for Governance at the University of Canberra. And she and some of her colleagues have been having a good think about this and a bit of a dig around. Good afternoon, Meredith.
Hello, Louise.
That's an amazing figure, 96,000 women in the public service.
It is.
Are there more women overall than men?
There are. And there are more women than men up to about the, till you get to the EL1, that's what it's called, level in the public service, which is under the SES level. And then the proportions change. There are more men than women until you get to the top. As you said, only 4 out of 22 heads of departments are women.
Presumably you're not the first people to realise that there's a bit of an issue here. What sort of work has been done to try to figure out what's going on?
Well, there's been work for about 20-something years. I can remember writing about it over 20 years ago, but the extent of progress has been rather slow. In the old days, people used to say, oh, just wait until there are more women coming through the system. Everything will be all right. But I think some of the leaders in the public service now recognise that's not the case, and a good case in point is Martin Parkinson, who has very recently surveyed the perceptions of males and females in his department. Department at the senior level.
Which is his department?
Treasury.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, of course. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. And his senior executive was shocked at the results of finding out what the perceptions of men and women were about why this situation is as it is. And he is particularly saying we can't say that we just wait for the women to come through because we've been waiting and that's not happened. So something more drastic has to happen.
What was so interesting about these perceptions?
Well, I think, and I'm particularly drawing here on the private sector evidence, but it's supported by the Treasury evidence, that the vast majority of men think that the reason women who are getting into the SES don't go any further or are slower at getting promotion is because of family responsibilities. But the vast majority of women don't say that. They might acknowledge there are work practices that make it more difficult to have a family and to work. But they're saying, particularly this is so in the private sector literature, and I suspect it's so if we surveyed as we want to the public sector, that it's lack of self-belief, it's lack of self-confidence. And that could well arise out of workplace practices where there is some unconscious bias working against the employment of women.
So lack of self-confidence, even when women have gone a fair way up that ladder.
That's right. And some of them find that when they come back from, say, maternity leave and they want to have part-time work, or they're going even from part-time, where they've been perhaps not taken too seriously, to full-time work, that they find that there are many reasons why they feel that the workplace is not embracing of them, inclusive of them. There are many reasons for that, which they'll specify, which takes away their confidence.
The thing about maternity leave too, or any sort of time away from your job in the public service, and it's not always just because of maternity leave, there can be study leave or all sorts of things, but something that you've pointed out is that when people come back, when women come back, things have changed in their workplace, so existing networks have dispersed, which makes it harder for them to get a grip on things. Can you talk more about that?
Well, yes, that's a quite common. And often they'll come back and they don't go back into their same position anyway. Even if they did, they'll find that people have changed positions, so they have to rebuild their networks. Often they aren't able to go back into their existing position. But worse than that is often the attitudes in the workplace about whether or not they're serious about now being progressing their career because of their family responsibilities. Now, there will be those limitations. I mean, excessive and ridiculous hours in the public service don't help. But if there's an unconscious bias that, oh, yes, well, women have families and they don't really want to go on while they've got young children, then the practices aren't going to change. I mean, I can remember one example when I was a senior public servant some time ago now, where we had, as it turned out, several men who needed and wanted to be home with their children around the feeding of their baby and bathing them in the evening. So we, and they used to catch the bus, so that we would make sure that they got on that bus at 5:30 or 6. If we had to bring them back at 8 o'clock at night, we would. How rare that was, as it turned out, because we didn't need to. Efficiency took place during the day, so that the outcome was what was important, not just the hours worked.
And we have heard, I don't work in those areas, but I have heard that, as you say, the pressure is more intense than it was maybe 20 years ago. So that would make it harder, even if there were the best of intentions now. We think that we've moved on, but we, to a large extent, we've gone backwards.
But this is where it's very important to get on top of the culture, and for the lead and leadership is absolutely critical, which is why I like the leadership that we're seeing at the moment in Treasury. But it needs to go beyond leadership. It's got to be institutionalised. It's no good having a Martin Parkinson saying that he's going to do something, and he is, and he's going to have targets that he's going to achieve to make sure there are more women in the SES, in his department.
So how's he going to do that? Is that through positive discrimination?
No. It's all based on merit. But my point is, once he goes, then, unless it's institutionalised, we can move backwards. We used to have 5 or 6 women who headed departments. We're back to 4. But what he is doing is he's setting targets. He's saying that he will have 35% of his SES as women by the year 2016. The average across is 37 across the public service at the moment, and a higher figure into the future he has set as a target. But he's also set up a group, including Sue Varden, who used to head Centrelink, who's come in as an external person to monitor and assess and give him advice on how to do this and what some of the barriers are from her experience. He's making sure that there is training in unconscious bias so that his SES go through the training so that they're aware, the men are aware of the sort of practices they have that might mean that they don't realise that they're biased, but in fact they are.
Yeah, tell us more about this unconscious bias. How does what's involved there? What's going on?
Well, it may be that, for example, if women, as it seems to be the case, are less likely to apply for promotion and they're more likely to need encouragement to be promoted, if you go out and you advertise for a position and you don't go looking for the best person for the job, you just wait to see who applies, then you're not likely to get the best people into the job. That is a point on merit. You're likely to get a narrow set of applicants. So a very important part of your job as an SES officer, looking around for those you can promote into the SES, is to ensure that you have women as well as men who are best for that job. And if women are not putting their names forward, then
because of that lack of confidence.
Absolutely.
You
go and encourage them rather than discourage them because you feel that they've been out and they might want to look after their children and they don't like the hours. The hours should change as well. Alongside that, of course, unconscious bias comes in when you have excessive hours and you're assessing on hours and not on outcome or output.
You've also made the point, Meredith, that when applying for senior positions, and we're generalising to a certain extent, not all women, not all men, but that there are a significant proportion of women who think, look, I won't go for that because I don't think I can cover off all the criteria. I don't think I've really got all the skills. Whereas men who might think that, will also go on to think, but look, I'll have a go.
Exactly.
You know, I'll have a go.
We hear that time and time again. That there's a difference of attitude there. Why that is the case needs to be further explored. I think we have to unpack a lot of this. We don't really understand it all, and that's why we want to do a survey that goes beyond just the survey that has currently been done in Treasury. There's also been one in Defence, by the way, which was released a couple of days ago, which is called the Review of Employment Pathways for APS Women in the Department of Defence. But we need
quite a lot of reviews into defence.
This is one of the ones that was released, but it didn't get so much publicity.
Yes.
But what we want to go across the public service. Why? Because we want to see whether in the departments where there's over half of the SES are women, such as in health and education, employment, DIWA, whether there are the same sort of lack of self-belief and other factors operating in women's minds, or whether it's a very different culture. We want to test what is happening in those places. Both of them, as it turns out, have heads who are women. Is that a factor?
And has it got something to do with health and education, those particular...
Has it?
I don't know.
Those are seen as softer, so-called softer areas, but has it? And the PM&C, where I used to work, has got a high proportion of women, and that goes across all areas. And so it may well depend on leadership, so as well as other factors. But why it is as it is, and what are the factors underlying that, is something that we want to explore further.
One of our listeners has sent us a text. Maybe women aren't so cutthroat and don't trample over their colleagues so readily. They work ridiculous hours, the women who are at the top.
Okay, there are two points there. One is, and it's often said, that women's leadership style is different, that they're more collaborative, collegial, and less competitive and combative. That may well be true as a generalisation, but that just shows the difference in conception of what's a good leader, because there's no reason why a woman of that kind couldn't be as good a leader, if not a better leader, than a more competitive, combative guy. But it's about what makes good leadership, which is currently too narrowly defined. The other about them working ridiculous hours, and that would put a lot of women off if they see other women working ridiculous hours, so that's something we have to think about. Often women do the hard work, and they're known to do the hard work, but they're still not seen as promotional material. They're reliable. They're there to fill in the gaps. So there's something else going on there apart from the fact that women are working hard that is not guaranteeing their promotion.
Yeah, and also, are there real differences between the public service and the private sector?
My survey of the literature would say no. There's been a recent study by Bain and Company, and it's just exactly the same as what we so far know about the public sector. We probably know more about the private sector than we know about the public sector. So some of the questions that have been asked of employees in the private sector, we intend, where they're appropriate, to ask them when we survey in the public sector.
And just a final question. There's so much more we could talk about, but Martin Parkinson, the Secretary of the Treasury Department, who, as you say, is really trying to implement some change here. Why does he say it's important?
He believes that there's a business case for it. He believes that he needs diversity. That reflects the nature of citizens, of course, who we ultimately serve when we're in government. So he can see the benefits of diversity, and he can see how he's being held back by not having people of merit in the positions of power.